August is a good time to clean up the closet a little bit. Get rid of the summer stuff that you didn't use. Prepare for your autumn wardrobe and upgrade the basics that you'll actually reach for every week. That's why I like Quince. They make fewer, better pieces that feel premium, but don't come with the luxury markup. For me, the piece I keep coming back to is the 100% European linen drawstring beach pants with the matching shirt. I love wearing them on beach vacations because they're easy, they're breathable, comfortable, and they look put together without feeling like I'm trying too hard. Throw them on during the day, wear them by the water, or dress up a little bit at night. That's the kind of staple I actually use because it has versatility. And that's really what Quince does well. They specialize in everyday pieces that work harder, like ultra soft organic cotton tees and premium Magnolia cashmere sweaters that can go from a casual workday to dinner out. If your basics are starting to feel worn out, Quince makes it easy to upgrade with premium denim and tailored chinos from just $60 with the fit, structure, and quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a go-to for everything from hotel quality bedding and bath essentials to premium cookware and travel must-haves. Guys, you've been hearing it for so long now how I tell you have to go to quince.com because the website is so fun for all the options that they have. It's a great website to go click around, and the prices can't be beat. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers. Go to quince.com/crypto101. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/crypto101. Stop waiting for permission to start your business. Your idea is one step away, and Shopify can make it easy to make it happen. That's what we did at Crypto 101, and use Shopify to sell our book, and the rest is history. The thing I like about Shopify is it takes the scary part out of starting. You're not just sitting there trying to figure out a website, payments, checkout, inventory, all these little things that stop people before they even launch. When I think about building a storefront, the biggest thing is friction. You want someone to land on your page, like what you're selling, and be able to buy without getting stuck. That's where Shopify is huge. Shopify checkout is built to help more customers finish their purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. One tap and they're done. The cool part is Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from huge brands that you know, like Mattel and Gymshark, to small businesses just getting started. So whether you're building the next big brand or launching your first product, the infrastructure is already there. Once that part is handled, you can focus on the real work, building the brand, getting attention, and bringing people to your storefront so the business can grow. That moment when someone actually buys, that's when the idea becomes real. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business, so go make it one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. That's a free trial at shopify.com/crypto101.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, gather around. I hope you're having a fantastic morning, noon, or night, wherever you are in the world. You're certainly in the right place because we're out east at the Out East Summit. I've got Josh Lim, the global co-head of markets at Falcon X, joining me. I'm so excited to have you, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. Totally an expert market practitioner, former Goldman, former Galaxy, former Circle. You've been at all the big places. All the big shops.
That's right.
And now you're heading up markets globally for Falcon X. You know, incredible firm. They do, you know, exchanging, custody. I mean, pretty much everything.
Lots of things.
And we're going to dive into all of that. But first, we just want to kind of get you acquainted with the audience. Tell us a little bit about why you left Wall Street, why you, and came to crypto. What was it about crypto that was kind of like screaming your name?
Yeah. Well, this is kind of looking all the way back to 2014, when that happened.
You were early.
Yep. I mean, it was a very different place, obviously. Right. Crypto was much more of like, you know, a place to be if you were kind of rebelling against the machines and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it was what motivated me was like being in a frontier asset class.
Yeah.
You know, one that didn't have like very ossified kind of market structure and clientele and everything. It was constantly evolving into something new. That was what crypto was back then.
It
was a chance to really work in a like a fintech company, like a startup, you know. And I was coming from a bank. I was coming from Goldman, and I landed in a seat at Circle. And it really opened up my eyes to like, one, how a startup works, you know, like being in an operator seat there.
Yeah.
working with a team, like trying to roll product out the door.
Yep.
And then two, I think it was just like the nascency of crypto and like how to build a network, build a network of liquidity sources, how to build like connectivity to early venues and things like that.
Yeah.
And that was all very exciting. And I think over time, like what we've seen, obviously it's like the markets become more institutional.
Yeah.
Just like every asset class over time, it just becomes more professional investors, you know, less retail driven. But it's still fun, right? Like it's just constantly becoming like the asset class is reinventing itself like every couple of months.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah. And it's funny. It's like the only asset class that eventually wants to kind of replace every other asset class, right? Like everything wants like an equity is going to be on chain.
That's true.
Right.
That's true.
Commodities, you know, are going to be on chain. And it's just kind of an interesting evolution, right? Because is it an asset class? Is it an industry? Like, how do you kind of define?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, right? Like, I think the thesis for why blockchain has changed a lot.
Yeah.
It used to be, hey, this is an asset class, a store of value, maybe
a currency.
Yeah. Maybe in some cases it's like a way to, you know, have self-sovereignty, like, you know, I want something that isn't within the confines of a government or a centralized scheme or whatever.
Yeah.
But over time, it's become more of like a technology layer,
or right,
payment rails, like a way to kind of build this, you know, infrastructure and the sort of like plumbing for traditional markets.
Yeah.
And I think along the way, right, like we've lost some people for sure.
Yeah.
We've lost like a lot of the crypto anarchists, like
rest in peace, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Well, yes, but also like, you know, the people who are like idealistic about
for sure.
Bitcoin,
yeah,
as this sort of like non-sovereign store of value.
Right. Right? Like, so, oh, everybody sold out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's like, when you think about market price action today,
yeah,
it's like, I think it's reflecting that sort of long-term transition in
totally
usage and, you know, shareholder base and all that kind of stuff around crypto.
It seems like it's a large turnover, right? I mean, I remember back in September, October timeframe, there was some really large transactions of these old wallets that sold like $9 billion.
Exactly.
And it was basically just people saying, hey, I've held since $100. Yeah. $100,000 was my price target. I'm rotating out. I'm sailing off into the sunset. And it felt like, you know, if we kind of take a look at like, you know, why the market is where it's at right now.
Right.
I think to your point, there's a maturation process where the innovators and the startup people have now kind of phased out. And now you have sort of the institutions here and stuff. You have a turnover of positions.
Right.
But I think, like, in my opinion, you can't have this conversation of why are we down so much without looking at what happened on Binance on 1010, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Could you walk us through from a really high level of what went wrong, and is the market stronger for that having happened? Is there new things in place to make sure we don't have just these market-wide, you know, liquidations?
Yeah.
Or is that
yeah.
still a present risk?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just to take a global view, like yeah. it definitely affected the broader landscape of crypto liquidity venues and
yeah.
liquidity providers like us. A lot of other firms out there. I think generally speaking, what happened was like the market has thinned out over the last year or so, right? I think there's been a concentration of liquidity and investor interest in the top, let's say like four or five tokens,
okay.
coins. And I think a lot of it is because there's like a broad recognition that not everything is actually accruing value.
Right.
Right. It's nothing, it's not everything is backed by revenue and cash flows and
despite what the white papers say.
Exactly.
This was the emperor has no clothes moment.
Kind yeah. of. And crypto, like if you look at the numbers of like, let's say how many altcoins launched in any year, right? Like by far the last couple of years have seen
parabolic
growth. And that is a dilution of investor attention.
It's a good point.
And at some point people get, you know, when you lose money on altcoins many, many times over, like you realize like, okay, there's only a handful of things that are like long-term investable.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's part of the backdrop. And now you have these venues globally that thrive on retail trading,
sure.
right? That's how they make their money. And when you attenuate like the retail capital, and it's not just because crypto itself became too dilutive, but it was also like there was more exciting stuff outside of crypto.
Yeah.
Right? There was like AI, there's like yeah, supply chain stuff. There's, you know, whatever. Robotics,
I was buying critical minerals for the first time. I was buying quantum stocks. It was who needs crypto anymore?
Yeah, it was like atoms, not bits, right?
That was the whole thing. Right.
So I think that's another reason why you had this sort of attenuation, like dilution of liquidity.
Yeah.
And so now you have these this event where maybe there was like a large initial sort of drawdown in crypto prices.
Yeah.
And that triggered sort of a broad like disappearance or evaporation of liquidity on all these like long tail of crypto assets.
Yeah.
And once you have that, that really cascades to like people's portfolios getting marked down, people's collateral books being marked down.
For sure.
And then that exacerbates the whole issue.
Right? Yeah, self-reflexive.
But I think the real primary cause is the fact that there's just an attenuation of liquidity across the whole ecosystem, and it's carried through to this day where there is now only a concentration of tokens that people can view as like long-term investable.
Everybody is talking about AI right now, but the AI that actually matters is the kind that saves you time, helps you make smarter decisions, and takes work off your plate. And if you're running an e-commerce business, shipping is one of those things that can either keep you moving or completely slow you down. That's why I like ShipStation. It's an end-to-end order fulfillment platform built for e-commerce businesses, and its AI is trained on decades of real shipping data from billions of shipments across the world. So instead of juggling a bunch of different tools, ShipStation helps you stay in control. It can alert you when your stock is low, recommend the best carrier selections and rates, automate tasks, and help you save time as you grow. You also get inventory syncing across sales channels, automatic rate shopping, a branded returns portal, and integrations with accounting and CRM software, all in one place. If I were running an e-commerce store, this is exactly the kind of tool I'd want, because once the orders start coming in, you don't want shipping to be the thing that's holding you back. Over 1 million businesses have trusted ShipStation to optimize and scale their shipping. The sooner you switch, the sooner you start saving time and money. Get started with ShipStation today and get 60 days free at ShipStation.com with code crypto. That's ShipStation.com, code crypto. ShipStation.com, code crypto. Taxes and fees apply. I don't know about you, but dinner sneaks up on me all the time. I'll open the fridge and realize I have no protein ready. And at that point, I'm not trying to go to the store, make a last-minute grocery run, and gamble on whatever meats or burgers are left at the store. That's why Omaha Steaks is a great freezer move. It's like having a trusted butcher at home and quality protein when you need it the most. Omaha Steaks has earned its reputation with over 100 years. It's the same beef trusted in kitchens across the country, shipped straight to your door. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, but it didn't, just minutes. And if you never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect place to start. You get 20 premium steak burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak. 4 filet mignon burgers, 4 New York strip burgers, 4 ribeye burgers, 4 brisket burgers, and 4 sirloin burgers. Guys, this is the altcoin basket of burgers right here. If me and Brian were on the rundown, we would be divvying these up 50-50 because you know how we like to grill in the summer. So you're not just getting a box of burgers, you're getting different flavor profiles, different textures, and real steakhouse style variety you can throw on the grill or cook up fast during the week. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with the promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. You know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always the headcount, budget, or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves, and suddenly everybody's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform trusted by 94% of the Fortune 500. It captures workflows as they happen and turns them into step-by-step documentation your team can review and share. You just do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot automatically. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. Scribe doesn't just document workflows, it uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps and opportunities to simplify or automate. To see what Scribe could look like for your org, head to scribe.how/crypto101 and mention Crypto 101 for your first month of Scribe Capture free on select plans. That's Scribe, scribe.how/crypto101.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I want to dive into a couple things here to splinter off this. Primarily, what makes a token investable? I think a lot of people watching, you know, they might say, okay, well, we have Bitcoin, we have Ethereum, we kind of get that's the big platform, that's right. The big currency, right. But they might not understand the value accrual dynamics of what a guy like you really views as like, hey, this is maybe not saying here's the tokens I'm going to hold, but right. Here's the qualities of what token a guy like
sure,
you hold.
Sure, sure. Well, I think, I mean, look, we're at the end of the day, we're a sell side dealer. Like we respond to what our clients are interested
you'll,
in.
You'll trade any.
Right, right.
So there's a difference between trading and investing, right?
Right, right.
Sure.
We're a liquidity provider. But if I think through like what our customer base cares about. Right?
Yeah. The smart money.
Yes. I do think because the comps now are not, you know, a Dogecoin that went from $10 million to $1 billion.
Right.
The comps are like, okay, real businesses that are building AI infrastructure or whatever.
Yeah. Right?
So that's like, okay, so you need to hold something long-term that continually compounds.
Sure.
And the compounding part comes from like a moat, some kind of like a long-term defensive.
Like a real
business model. Yes.
So we're going back to real equity.
Right.
Now,
so yeah. What are those things in crypto today? There's not that many, right? There's
not
like
any
stable coins. Like that's an investable theme, right? Payments. That's actually generating, revenue,
right?
Because it's coming from real user interactions, moving coins, and you take a cut of that, or you take some net interest margin or whatever. That makes sense. Then there's like speculation.
Yeah.
Right? There's like the Kalshus and the Poly Markets and the Hyperliquids, and those things make money. And if you think about like what venture investors in crypto have been doing and what the hot sectors are, it's really those two things, right? And those are the tokens that associated with those two things that work.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could argue things like Bitcoin has a place as this sort of, you know, neutral bulk collateral asset that people kind of use and move around on chain to support positions and to, you know, back other types of transactions.
Sure.
And then with ETH, you could say maybe ETH is usable as a rail for stablecoins and other RWA, right? So those are kind of in Sol, you know, maybe arguably, and then Hive is obviously on the speculation side of the thing. So it's sort of like those are the things. Those are what you can invest in.
Yeah.
And I think that's how people are looking at it right now. No, like, is that always going to be the case? So probably not, right?
Right.
Like, at some point, retail capital comes back from equities or wherever it's gone back into crypto. And then you'll see like a proliferation of ideas that do like highly convex, you know, returns again.
But for sure.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was something that Tom Lee from Fundstrat and BMNR, he kind of tweeted out about the relative performance of like DRAM, the ETF versus Ethereum recently.
Right,
and
right.
So Ethereum's been like, you know, in the past month, as DRAM has been falling down and the semiconductors have been compressing, crypto's kind of caught a bid. And it sparked in my mind this idea that like capital that chases tech is scarce. Attention is scarce.
Yep.
And so everybody's been chasing AI. Do you think that now as AI might be cooling off a little bit and crypto's down 50 to 80% off the low or off the highs,
right.
Do you think like that is enough for people to start stepping back in and saying, you know, now the momentum might come to crypto? And maybe said another way, if that's not the case, what will it take for crypto to kind of get its mojo back?
Sure, sure. I mean, in my head, there's like two scenarios here. One is just like it's a time-based bear market.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah.
So Bitcoin's been sort of range bound and at the lows for quite some time now, and a lot of money has left the space. Yeah, and like crypto is the most cyclical asset class in the world.
Yeah, no man.
Exactly. So like people will see something pop off in crypto.
Yeah, and
they'll be like, oh, right now I got to get back in. Like, oh, I still got my Coinbase account. Let me like fund it or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
That's one scenario. The other scenario is like just a big cataclysmic thing, right? Like, okay, hey, there's it's like if you remember, you know, a couple of years ago, there was like the SVB bank crisis.
Yeah, totally. The 2023 March thing.
And that sort of triggered like a run up in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right. So people were like,
we can't trust the banks anymore.
Right. They're primed to be like, okay, if there's an issue with the financial system or with markets generally, you want to flock to like safe assets.
Yeah.
And like, not to say Bitcoin's like, you know, a zero vol, you know, safe haven. But it's one of these things that people think of, like, if I'm worried about the financial system,
yeah,
like this is something that sits outside of it.
Yeah. It's a flight to safety.
Yes, yes. Of course, you could say that that aspect of Bitcoin has been eroded in a way because it's sort of like so integrated into things like DATS, right? Into like strategy, MicroStrategy, and into things like the ETF, like IBIT, right? Yeah. And so now it's like, okay, is it actually uncorrelated? Is it sitting outside of the banking system and the financial system broadly? I still think there's a place for it,
yeah,
as that sort of like the place you position to hedge and to stay outside,
yeah,
of everything else.
It almost feels like that's what like Bitcoin's aspiring to be. Like Larry Fink was talking about how like, you know, crypto will do really well in a period of like government distrust and it's like and inflation and stuff. And it's crazy to hear that from the largest asset manager in the world, right? And so it's like, even though crypto might not be that today, that's how these asset managers with a 100-year time horizon are thinking. Like,
that's right.
This is what it can grow into.
That's right.
And so, yeah, it's just fascinating. And, you know, I kind of want to take a look in your mind, like, when you look at like one of the questions, like I do a lot of different reading and like with wealth managers, and they say one of the questions our clients are most concerned about is like government debt level.
Sure.
Does this come to bear on your work at all? Or do you just think, okay, the bedrock of finance, everything's built out the risk-free rate, the US Treasury, that's as good as gold forever.
Right.
Or is there ever a question your clients come and ask you like, hey, is the sovereign debt complex ever going to have a crisis?
Right, right. So I think, yeah, the sort of like inflation around Bitcoin,
right,
that was much more prevalent, you know, let's say like a year ago, yeah, 2 years ago. Since then, like Bitcoin has not kept pace with gold.
Right.
Right. I think we all have observed that phenomenon.
Or M2, right? And that all started to decorrelate on October 10th, right?
Yes,
when Bitcoin really started to collapse. And
so I think, you know, I don't think October 10th like caused it, but I think it created a lot of questions. It spurred a lot of conversation
for sure,
like macro allocators and you know, even, you know, let's say sovereigns or like, you know, pensions, endowments, like all these folks that had historically thought about crypto and investing into it long term.
Yep.
I think the questions it created were, you know, first around like, okay, the stability of this asset class, like if it can have these sort of large down moves, and in fact the entire universe of altcoins had even worse moves, you know, like let's say down 90% in a day or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, is that something I want to be associated with and like, you know, put my career on the line for, you know, a small, like whatever, 2% allocation into crypto, right?
Right.
Now that created those questions, but then like in the months since, I think there's been a sort of increase in concerns, sort of like a wall of worry around Bitcoin specifically.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, around things like the quantum risk of Bitcoin, right?
Quantum people are scared about, you know?
Exactly. It's around like the concentration risk.
Yeah. MicroStrategy.
Exactly. It's around like the political sort of
ethics committee.
Exactly.
The political
Trump likes cryptos.
Yes. Yes. And then there's issues around like the long-term sustainability of even things like things that are very fundamental to Bitcoin, like the block rewards.
Right, right, right.
Like, is the security budget of Bitcoin enough to sustain Bitcoin's security long-term?
Big question,
right?
Yeah.
Big question. So I think all those things got surfaced because of what happened.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're seeing now, is just take like a couple quarters, right?
Yeah.
These questions to really like play out, and we're building answers to these things slowly as an industry.
Yeah.
But then once you answer those questions, not to say they're easy questions to answer, but once there are more clear indications that the community, like the dev community, even like the people building around Bitcoin, and that could include firms like BlackRock, firms like Coinbase, the core devs and whatever.
Yep.
Like once they come up with better solutions to these things and clear answers that they communicate to investors, then it regains this like, okay, this is sort of a neutral store value asset narrative, like dollar inflation hedge, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many directions I want to take this, but I want to make sure we spend some time as well talking about FalconX, the products you offer, the clients you work with. But I have to keep diving in on a couple things here with the 4-year cycle.
Sure.
Typically there's the 3-year up, you know, there's a year that's like a sideways year, and then 2 years of up, and then 1 year that's like the bear market where you're down 70-80%. We're in that fourth year, sort of the 2 years after the halving, where Bitcoin typically has about a year of down and all that kind of stuff. And so You know, do you think that the 4-year cycle will kind of keep perpetuating? And you know, Q4 is potentially the quarter where we start to tick back up,
right?
Or do you think it's just been spurious? Or random?
Yeah, it's almost like hard to dismiss as random at this point. Right. Like, yeah, you've seen these cycles play off so many times. I think it's like an element of crypto being a little bit untethered to like real fundamental value, right?
Sure.
It's not like something where you're just like, okay, where you know, revenues are going down or like GDP is
story
like,
here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is just has to do with like human psychology.
Yeah.
Right? That's what crypto is. It's like the desire to have some new asset be like a place you can store your assets, yeah, and value, right? So I do think that's why you have this cyclical phenomenon.
That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
When you invest for yourself personally, or when you invest, or I should say trade on behalf of the sell side firm at Falcon X, what indicators do you think our listeners could find most useful? Because everybody knows, oh, technical analysis or whatever, but are you paying attention to volatility curves and funding rates? Tell us a little bit about, you know, how we could get inside your mind.
Right. Well, like my background before crypto was trading equity derivatives.
Okay.
And as I've gone through crypto, like multiple seats and helping to build the business at Falcon X, like a lot of what we do is focusing on the derivatives market, specifically the options market.
Okay.
And the options market is special in crypto because it's really the place where a lot of institutional risk expression happens.
Sure.
Right. Whereas like in the spot markets, in the perp markets, it might be more retail,
yep,
activity. Like in the options market, I think the dominant volume is coming from hedge funds that are active in our space.
Yeah.
Right. So,
because you really can't get exposure to crypto options unless you're a hedge fund.
Well, you can. I mean, there's like places like Deribit or now IBIT options are widely accessible.
Okay.
But I think like what's driving a lot of the vol dynamics and the forward curve dynamics are really from hedge fund flows.
Okay.
So I would say the things that we look at are things like, okay, what kind of risk premia is the market expressing?
Risk premia.
Yeah.
Tell us what that means.
Yeah. It's sort of like, okay, implied vol, for instance, okay, right? Implied vol is the price of an option.
Sure.
It's how expensive it is relative to the realized vol, right? Because like in theory, an option's price is based solely on how much an asset moves. But there's also sometimes a premium on top of that that reflects like the market demand for protection.
The expectation of, oh, there's going to be a big earnings report or something.
Right,
so people bid it up a little bit. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
So okay.
We look at that a lot, right? Like both kind of the implied vol level on an absolute level as well as like the implied vol versus realized.
Yep.
And if you look at those metrics today, it's low. I mean, those metrics are low, and Bitcoin realized is actually very, very low because Bitcoin's been stuck in a range for so long, right? And I would say on top of that, there's sort of this market expectation that Strategy and other large holders are not necessarily buying in, and they might actually be net suppliers of Bitcoin in the short term, especially on any kind of like moves higher. So what does that mean? That means we should stay range bound and the right trade. And this is the trade that's been expressed by a lot of people is actually just like ball selling,
The
hull overriding, like seeking yield in an environment where actual volumes and activity and volatility is very compressed.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's driving the market today, and certainly an indicator worth watching. Another one is obviously things like the funding rate on perpetual swaps. So some measure of like forward curve, you know, demand. And I think that is also near lows, right? Like one trade that used to exist a lot in crypto is just the basis trade between perps and forwards.
It used to be like 30% at the peak.
At the peak,
it's crazy.
And that's compressed a lot. That's a sign that there's a lot of capital in crypto now that you do these trades. But it's also an indication that there's not a lot of demand for leverage.
Okay.
And when markets like, you know, just range bound and flat, like you're not going to see a lot of people be like, all right, today is the day I'm going to take out 20x long.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, I think over time, like, all these things have normalized to levels that you kind of see in traditional markets.
Yeah.
Whereas before it used to be like, you know, there was more euphoria in these things that came from a lot of retail capital coming in.
Yep.
But now it's like, the leverage and the sort of the volatility that it comes from people, you know, speculating on this asset class has really damped it. Yeah.
Love it. If you could peer over to the edge of the next bear market. So after we kind of come, you know, there's always some exogenous event that whether it's the FTX, FTX actually happened at the lows,
right?
But it was the Luna 3AC unwind. We had like the Grayscale fund that like was closed. Obviously in 2017, we had the CME futures that top ticked it.
Right.
If you peer over the edge into the what catalyzes the next fair market, after we have a big run, what do you think will be
like
that?
The risks, the systemic risks?
Bingo. Is it going to be like, you know, a fucking ETF just like blows up and like you could see that? Like, where can you game out? Like, that could technically actually happen, and or like MicroStrategy gets liquidated or something like that.
I feel like we've only talked about negatives except this podcast. But
this is a bear market.
It's true. And we should be prepared, right?
We should be prepared.
I mean, yeah. So there are a lot of systemic risks, right? Like one is obviously,
and you're the risk man. I brought all these questions to you because like these are the questions I genuinely have. And you're
I think about all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So the things that could catalyze like another leg down, let's say, right?
Yeah.
It would be, you know, there's obviously like risk around AI.
Okay.
Like the Mythos risk is what
people hack it, using AI to hack crypto, basically.
So we've already seen that happen a couple times on chain, right? Yeah. Like smart contracts that are exploited because people have come up with new ways to sort of hack against different protocols.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's one avenue. And that can be very disruptive. Like we saw that earlier this year with like Aave, Meltdown.
I feel like Zcash as well. Like there was Zcash, rumors that Opus hacked Zcash.
Right. So that's one major category of risk.
Sure.
I think the other one is, you know, what you said, which is basically custodians, large holders of crypto. While many of them have years now of track record of securely storing digital assets.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there's many unknowns around this stuff, especially when there's going to be more, let's say, types of attacks, social engineering attacks, all kinds of things that are maybe enabled by AI as well. So that's another category. I think a third major category is around the financial engineering that's happening on chain. So a lot of this is being
looping,
or it's sort of like tokenization, right?
Yeah.
But what's being tokenized is not, let's say, a simple spot asset. It could be like a actively managed strategy.
Tokenized yield.
Strategy or something else. I could also see scenarios where even if it is a spot asset, like it's a tokenized stock, let's say.
Gets dislocated from the real thing.
Right, or like a bad issuer issues tokenized stock on an underlying that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Like that, right? So there's like this sort of class of systemic issues around like tokenized real world assets
for sure,
or actively managed treasury.
Oh, I'm hoping stuff like this doesn't happen, but it's good to know that all that's out there. And then final question on AI, and then I want to talk about FalconX because I know there's a lot of good stuff
going on there.
But give us a super prompt if we want to be a small, you know, say we have a few $1,000 and we're testing the new agentic trading systems, Claude hooked up to your Robinhood, Claude hooked up to your brokerage account. If you just had, you know, a few $1,000, because I know there's a lot of strategies that like don't scale. If you have $1 billion, like you can't do it. But like, what would be an ideal super prompt or whatever to tell an LLM so that you could be printing money on the buy side with options?
No, I think, like the key to using AI for this stuff is really like describe. I think it's not like, okay, I have this strategy I want to implement. It's sort of like a good implementation or AI system would basically, you tell your intent. It's like, my intent is like, I want to make money by allocating, let's say, capital to like the highest risk adjusted yield on chain.
Yeah.
And then it should really try to figure out like where to allocate all that. Right. So that would be like the prompt. And then like, you have to kind of define a universe of things like, all right, I want to do basis trades on, you know, crypto assets, RWAs, you know, equities, commodities, all this stock board. And then, you know, hopefully, We're at this point almost like where it can sort of like deploy the capital for you and manage it and rebalance it and all this stuff. Yeah,
that's cool.
So yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah,
that's just really market neutral strategy. Right?
Yeah, I like it. Well, at FalconX, you guys touch a lot of different parts of the market, from like I said, custody, OTC services. You're obviously making markets for options. You know, tell us, you know, kind of in your view, you know, what at the core is FalconX? What's the plan for growth? Like, who do you guys want to be? Like, who are you now and who do you want to be?
Yeah. That's a good question. So we've been around since 2017, 2018 timeframe. The firm is originally conceived as like a prime brokerage business. So meaning like we provide access to sophisticated investors, hedge funds, asset managers, you know, VCs, who want to access crypto markets, and they use our pipes to trade on exchanges, and they use our trading desk to access markets that are more esoteric, like things that aren't listed on exchange. They might quote us on something, and we provide that liquidity on a principal basis to them. So,
meaning it's your firm's money.
Exactly. We're on the other side of the trade, and then we figure out a way to hedge it.
Got it.
So that's been, over time, like the set of things that we provide, this sort of liquidity service around, has expanded dramatically.
Yeah.
Right. It used to just be like spot trading, and then it became like, maybe forwards and swap, you know, total return swaps. And now it's like, you know, options and more exotic things and maybe systematic strategies. And over time, the firm's added sort of bits and pieces that are supplementing the core business.
Yeah.
So, you know, we bought like a set of asset managers. One is called 21 Shares, which is ETF-ish.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. And then more recently, we bought a firm called BlockShroud. BlockShroud?
Oh, BlockShroud. Yeah, Uri Carmen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was a very recent one, but...
to help with the networking and stuff.
Correct. Like we believe, you know, has... more real world assets move on chain, that latency of these like networks, these blockchain networks, is going to be a much bigger consideration for sophisticated investors. So that's kind of another area that we're investing in. But I would say, like, it's basically market access to crypto and then finding the best price, whether it's through routing directly to exchanges or using us as a trading business to take the other side.
Yeah. And how big is the firm in terms of capital you guys work with or customers?
We're about like 300 people. You know, in terms of customer base, it tends to be, you know, there's a lot of crypto native firms that we've worked with over the years, almost like everyone in the space that you talk to some degree. And then more recently, it's like newer entrants would be TradFi firms, right? Like Yakro, Hedgebonds, you know, even equity, like long short guys, you know, banks, fintechs,
for sure,
payments companies. Like they all kind of use our, whether it's our trading services or our financing and kind of like our credit book, in one way or another, they're sort of interacting with us to source access or liquidity in crypto markets.
Makes a ton of sense. We'll leave our viewers with a positive note on top of their mind.
Of course.
Anywhere that you kind of want to take it, right? Like, is there something that you've seen recently, a product you're using, a strategy you're using, an institution that you've been, you know, working with, where you're just like, this gets me hyped up for, you know, the next bull market. This gets me hyped up on, you know, coming to work every day.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would say, I had a good opportunity, I think it was a couple weeks ago, to go to London to see the Robinhood product launch.
For sure.
And that was a very exciting time. I think, you know, I think the one thing people say in crypto a lot is like, oh, there needs to be more applications, like consumer applications.
Consumer.
Things that bring people on chain.
Yeah.
And I think Robinhood is really trying to do that now. We're actually partnered with Arcus, which is one of the like RWA perp DEXs that are launching on Robinhood chain. We're one of the market.
Was that formerly UIDX? Or
The team would be UID for sure. Day. So we think there's going to be more of that happening, where it's like, you know, global access to these RWA markets, commodities markets, 24/7 on chain.
Can't wait.
That's honestly the most exciting for us.
I love it. Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, that's Josh Lim, co-head global markets, Falcon X. Josh, thank you so much for joining us here on the Crypto 101 podcast. Where can people follow you on X, LinkedIn? Where do you like to kind of send people? Obviously, falconx.com.
.com or .io.
Falconx.io, not .com. And, don't go there.
my Twitter or my X is Joshua_J_plant, L-I-M.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, stay tuned. We're going to have some more great guests for you. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the summit.
Thank you.